Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations happening in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets.
Thank you very much for joining us again. An honour to have Andrew McKenzie from Ghent as a guest. We're here to talk about a GBP or sterling stablecoin, which is a novel project. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here and first podcast. So quite excited to see how we get on.
I'd like to also thank Helen Disney, who's connected us. She was one of the original inspirations for The Gauge. So great to see that she's supporting Ghent as well.
Helen's been fantastic for us. She's opened up a lot of doors and she keeps me on the straight and narrow when it comes to all things media, which is fantastic.
So I'm guessing most can hear there's a Scottish accent involved here. A few of the Scottish banks have been able to issue their own sterling notes. It'd be great to hear some of the stories for why you set up Ghent and what's the rationale for your interest in the space.
I can give you a little bit of background to Ghent. So my previous role before starting Ghent was remitting funds for agricultural businesses internationally. And I guess while I realized that traditional financial services and payment systems, they work, they function, there's a level of innovation that sort of happened in other areas of the world but hasn't quite made it to the traditional financial system where it really could be. It was back in November 2023 when I was reading the Bank of England and FCA's discussion papers into the retail and wholesale payment systems in the UK and bringing stable coins into them, that I thought to myself, maybe there's an opportunity here for there to be a GBP stablecoin. Obviously, you see the success that Circle, Tether and Paxos have had and the explosion of US-denominated stablecoins globally. But the British pound sterling is the fourth largest currency in the world and there's not a stablecoin. It doesn't quite make sense. So I really set about, almost by accident, in a way, it was an off-the-cuff comment to some lawyers when I was involved in a different blockchain project. I said, what's your views on a UK-domiciled, UK regulated privately issued stablecoin? And they explained the regulatory landscape is similar to the businesses and the organizations that went away and built a product, then took it to the regulators and said, look, this is what we've got. What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? How can we engage with you to create something that's innovative but compliant is the best way to go? So we set about building the product. Originally, it was very much a retail focus, but very quickly we brought on some of our advisors and they really helped shape our strategy that we started to come up with more of an institutional facing product. And that's got us to where we are today. The best way to sum up the last year for us is every time we felt like a door's closed, another door's opened. And with that, we sort of leapfrogged forward, whether that's been gaining further credibility or starting to work with an organization, whether it's a public body or a private, that is, again, just made us push ourselves, change our thinking slightly in what we're doing with Ghent.
Fantastic. And obviously, a lot of the names you mentioned are dollar-based stablecoins. It'd be great to hear if you could, I think most of our listeners understand what a stablecoin is, but just in your own words, how do you define a stablecoin? And what do you think is the use case for a GBP stablecoin?
So for me, a stablecoin is a digital asset that's value is tied to a basket or specific reference asset. So it's designed to maintain a stable value for a long period of time. It's there to minimize volatility and act as a settlement instrument for assets on chain. There's a lot of benefits that stablecoins offer, whether that's the programmability, the homogeneous set of rails with which stablecoins transact on, and it should be seen as the lowest risk instrument that you can interact with on-chain. What we've probably seen in the last year, it's like a maturing in the industry whereby I don't necessarily think we were ready for non-USD stablecoins 2 or 3 years ago. I don't think the market had the maturity. I don't think there was the right level of credibility, so to speak, from key institutional players that are going to bring the depth of liquidity that's required for a product like this to be successful. What we're also seeing as well is a number of different areas of the traditional financial ecosystem recognize the benefits that stable coins present to what they're doing, the traditional business that they currently operate in day to day. While sort of stable coins, their growth originally was primarily crypto and then became viewed, particularly the US dollar stable coins were viewed as a safe haven for, or almost an on sort of decentralized bank account for those that didn't have access to dollars that wanted it. We're seeing this maturing whereby local jurisdictions, businesses, whether that's financial businesses, payments businesses, any organization that interacts with a financial system that has a time delay, they can see the benefits of the instantaneous or programmability aspects that the stablecoins offer. So in terms of the UK, where GBP, where does that really come in? It's actually very important in a number of different ways. I think particularly as we start to bring on real world assets on chain, whether that's tokenizing bonds, tokenizing equities, etc. There's a reason that GBP is still a thing and that we're all not using dollars in the UK. That's because we want our own currency, we want our own sovereignty. So I don't see why that can't exist on chain as well as off chain.
I definitely see the use case for the real world asset tokenization needing to have a digital native sterling to avoid FX costs. If you have digital dollars moving around an underlying that is sterling denominated, that adds additional friction, funnily enough. One of the big drivers for the adoption of, say, the dollar-based stablecoins is cross-border. As you say, the settlement times that are a little bit longer, if you move particularly emerging market to developed market, taking additional days to settle as opposed to more developed markets where you can settle relatively quickly. Do you think there is a use case for a cross-border sterling stablecoin?
Yeah, definitely. Our largest trading partner is Europe, and there's a lot of flow that happens between pounds and euros. And so by interacting with a digital pound alongside a digital euro, well, what does that enable us to do? Well, it enables us to have this frictionless layer, this rail that sits above the traditional financial payments ecosystem, that we're able to move funds much more seamlessly than we otherwise would be able to. I love the analogy of payment rails. And there's a reason that the Eurostar is built on its own gauge, because the British railways and European railways are actually different widths. And the British payment systems and European payment systems, while they're very similar, they are slightly different and they don't necessarily interact quite as seamlessly as we'd like them to. So by going up almost a new homogenous layer that sits on top of them, it allows that seamless interaction between different sort of financial systems that you can then drop into. So that is quite an important aspect. But there's also a large area of interest, a large area of growth for the use of stablecoins within your own domestic market. And there's a significant number of benefits, particularly on settlement, that you can bring stablecoins into.
Maybe looking at those respectively, obviously in the UK we have faster payments, but the programmability I can see is a value add for digital sterling, but maybe you could talk to on the settlement side. But what thresholds, where would be the benefit beyond faster payments?
There's a number of strands even within settlement. There's purely like crypto trading and firms and businesses that might carry out business in USD because that's where the most liquid markets are. However, they denominate in GBP, so they're constantly carrying that FX risk. There is that aspect, but focusing purely on the traditional side, your average individual in the UK has a high propensity to hold cash. And one of the reasons that they do that is they don't like the feeling that their money or their funds aren't accessible. For example, say we have quite a low risk appetite for holding stocks and equities. We have this society that likes to hold lower risk instruments, whether that's bonds or premium bonds or any other government denominated debt and cash. And one of the reasons for that is that people don't like that time delay that, say I'm in a money market fund and I sell into my online brokerage account. I've got to wait 3 days for those funds to actually settle into my account. And then I want to transfer it out to my bank account. I've got to wait another 3 to 5 days for those funds to hit again. But there could be near enough 10 days between physically selling the financial product and actually having those funds accessible in your bank account. For a lot of people, they don't like that level of time delay and discomfort. And while we can stitch it together with credit lines, one thing that stablecoins allow you to do is to make that instantaneous, bringing delivery and payment on chain, delivery of the asset and payment for the asset onto the same set of rails is massive, whereby I can sell a tokenized money market fund right now and I can have the cash in my bank account as fast as this transaction takes place to be fulfilled. So that opens up a lot of doors, whereby it allows a significant proportion of funds that would normally be held in cash to go into investable assets where that might not have happened previously.
Super interesting. We see with AI and the development of AI agents, the potential for automated allocation of liquidity towards highest yielding options. A stablecoin could help to unlock that in a way because it's digitally native and means more programmable. I'd like to push out the cross-border use case just as a thought exercise. Obviously, there's a digital euro discussion, maybe even as a CBDC. And you mentioned the euro to sterling trade as one of the potential use cases for digital sterling. If both sides were digital, say there's a digital euro and a digital sterling, a stablecoin respectively, the FX would happen between the two, so seamlessly.
Yeah, exactly. And FX on chain is something that's really exciting because it allows just the whole DeFi aspect. But if we don't focus on that and we think about this happening for an everyday world, then because at the moment we have this sensation. So that when you spend, you say you're a client of a neobank and you're spending euros abroad, you have this feeling that it's instant when in actual fact, it's not actually instant. It's a lot of agreements with a lot of different liquidity, domestic liquidity providers that provide that the release of those funds as and when the user wants to spend them. And then they're either settled quite quickly in the background, but to the user, that doesn't actually happen. Whereby now with stablecoins, that swap between the currencies happens instantly there and then. And it creates the potential for individuals or institutions that are interacting on between currencies on the blockchain to have a much tighter spread and a significantly reduced fees as well.
One of the phrases that's been going around and said by many cleverer people than I is that stablecoins are one of the killer apps for the digital world to engage with the real world, as you outlined, the dollar-based stablecoins. What were some key developments in 2024? And do you think any of these particularly are of relevance for the sterling stablecoin?
So yeah, there's a lot of really cool attributes and programmability that you can bring into stablecoins. I think when you look at the token extensions that you have on Solana and the different levels of programmability that you can have, obviously you've always been able to have season freeze and being able to manage funds in that sense. But what Solana's done is taken up a level with their token extensions and allowed for you to bring in different levels of adaptability and transformability that you can do with the stable coins. You can create, for example, natively yielding stable coins, whereby the value of the token accrues naturally. So in terms of the really cool breakthroughs for me within the stable coin ecosystem, in last year, there's quite a few. It's quite difficult to pinpoint one in particular. But when you see what, for example, squads are doing with banking as a service type products, subscription payments, and effectively creating what looks very like a direct debit, for example, on chain, I think there's cool things there. Something else that's really exciting is, at the moment, we have pay-per-view. So say you want to watch like a boxing match, for example, you pay your £19.95 and then you're good to go. But if you only watch 5 minutes, well, you've paid your £19. It doesn't matter if you watch all of it or not. Whereas now you can effectively pay in real time. And so there's that level of creativity. When you have that programmability aspect, there's a level of creativity that you weren't necessarily able to do with traditional e-money. So it would have to all be authorized up front and sewn together in the back, whereas now there's just a different level that you can create with these kinds of products.
It is very interesting to see when you re-engineer the plumbing, what you can do on the top of it that's more efficient. So I'm also very curious and good examples. I'd love to get your perspective on the CBDC, or central bank digital currency, versus stablecoin. Are they complementary? Do you see them as competitive? Is one needed? rather than the other? What do you think?
There will be a CBDC in basically every country. Whether it's specifically referred to as that or not is open for discussion. But it makes sense for central banks to have digital currency that they can interact with, particularly on the wholesale settlement side. That makes a lot of sense. Where I think there's a much larger debate, and where I'm not particularly convinced CBDCs make sense, their central bank digital currencies make sense, is at the retail level. Most of that is a perception and a trust issue that I'm not sure no amount of good PR and confidence building will ever get around. The best analogy would be government-owned social media. I don't think people would feel comfortable with that, even though you probably share more data with a private organization, that there's just a different level of comfort between private and sort of public-owned. I can see in the next 10, 15 years, central banks across the world implementing a CBDC in some form. I don't think us as individuals will likely ever interact with one, not for at least a very long time. At some point in the future, that might change. The key point, though, is that stablecoins and privately issued stablecoins and CBDCs can coexist. They serve different use cases. What a central bank would want from a digital currency isn't necessarily what a remittance firm would want from a digital currency.
I see the same arguments emerging for blockchains themselves. We see kind of a lot of blockchains think that they can build everything on top of them, but we're seeing diversity of payment systems or diversity of blockchains as a very good and healthy approach. I'd be curious to get your thoughts, maybe as a final question, around the open or public blockchains versus the more private or closed blockchains, and how you see those applying to the stablecoin market.
I think it comes down to the use cases. We're building on public blockchains, and that's where most of our growth and distribution is going to exist. However, in certain instances, private blockchains probably do make sense. Should you want to operate on a closed loop system, for example, look at Starbucks and their app that you can upload funds onto. It's not a stable coin, but in some ways it looks very like a stable coin would look on a private blockchain. What Starbucks is doing isn't on a blockchain, but if they were to completely rebuild the user app at the moment and did so on a private blockchain, I don't think people would take any issue to that. Where people get worried about private blockchains versus public is when it's more than your account with that organization, when it's your entire bank account or your entire investment account or your pension, for example. Then people don't necessarily have the same level of confidence in a private system versus a public ledger. Previously, we've seen general purpose blockchains spring up and the use case be discovered as the blockchain matures, whereas now we'll see a lot of apps and organizations create their own chains with a specific use case in mind, or a new blockchain startup with very niche and very directed use cases. I was having a conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago and they said, well, we can need to decide what blockchain we all want to build on. And that's the wrong opinion and the wrong way to look at it. We have to let that mature and let that develop as time goes on. And different blockchains are going to be good at different things. So some are going to be better at catering equities on chain, and some might be really good at purely payments because of the functionality that's inbuilt within the systems. So going forward, we'll see the whole mixture. The most crucial thing between them all is that we can have interoperability between different blockchains, and that we continue to abstract away that chain element away from the user as well, whereby it doesn't matter what blockchain system, whether it's EVM or SVM, etc. If the user wants to send funds from A to B and from this app to that app, they can do so freely and they don't have any kind of complication to overcome.
Fantastic. Quickly, safely and securely. That was my penultimate question. I'll get one more. The UK, I can very clearly see, is something that you're kind of committed to getting a sterling stablecoin online with. What would you recommend are the key elements that the UK or the British governments should consider for supporting companies like yours to set up here? What's the argument or pitch you would give them to say why they need you, and then Second, what do they need to do to help you succeed?
So I guess to go back a step, the UK needs to recognise that it has a huge amount of talent within the fintech ecosystem. When you look at the different organizations, specifically in fintech, that have really come to the fore globally throughout the last sort of 10, 15 years, we've got Revolut, Monzo, and now even Nubank has decided to come to the UK. So there's a very specific reason that they've decided to do that. And that's because we do have a lot of talent here, and not necessarily to go elsewhere that might have the illusion of being more attractive because there's, for example, less regulation. Regulation in itself isn't bad. The application of regulation and that there's a pathway to allow organizations to be regulated is really important. And that's something that they should double down on in 2025, is creating that pathway that organizations with an innovative idea can build and go to market within a reasonable time frame. Now, I'm not talking that I can start up a new project tomorrow and be regulated within a month, but firms shouldn't necessarily have to wait a significant period of time. Otherwise, there isn't necessarily going to be the incentive to innovate within the financial sector. They might go and choose a more unregulated sector, whether that's AI or something else. Creating the platform that the conversation can be continued, if that makes sense as well. So in a test environment where the regulators, for example, come up with a very specific set of outcomes that they want to achieve. And we basically put a bunch of organizations into a moat pit and they all crack on and we look at what we don't like. It's very difficult to decide how government should be interacting with a certain sector if the sector hasn't really developed and matured and really knows what it wants to do. So being open to things breaking. We're never going to get things right first. And if you speak to anyone about anything, whether they do it in business or sports or their career, they say you do learn from your mistakes. We have to have an environment that is open to people making mistakes. And what's important is how they recover from those mistakes and they rebuild and they create a better product. I guess for us specifically on our wish list, it's just a very clear set of standards that they would like to see organizations like ourselves operate by and make sure that it's very much a level playing field for all types of organizations.
Fantastic. Well, the UK has been a center of innovation historically. The euro dollar, for example, was a great innovation spearheaded here. The stablecoin market's a bit further along in other jurisdictions, but it's good to see that London's still carrying the torch with a certain stablecoin firm leading the charge. Andrew, thank you very much for your time. How would people get in touch with you or find you if they're keen to learn more?
A lot of people reach out on LinkedIn. So more than happy to anyone to slide into my DMs on LinkedIn or give our company page a follow there. Or I am Andy_Agan on Twitter.
Fantastic. Andrew, thanks again. All the best.
Thank you very much.